The Sci-Fonna Film Podcast. Okay, hello and welcome to another film review podcast. I realised that last week I didn't introduce us or anything. So I'm Andy and I have with me Scott.
Hello.
We're doing this on Zoom as it's all distancing and lockdown and stuff and things. And this week we're going to be looking at a horror film called Humanoids from the Deep, which is also titled Monster.
Yeah, that confused me for a minute when I watched it.
I know, it confused me as well. It was made in 1980. The executive producer was Roger Corman, who was very famous for making lots of horror and sci-fi B-movies. Starred the inimitable Doug McClure, who is just incredible as an actor, and Vic Morrow, who was in lots of other things. Now, the tagline from the original film poster says, "They're not human, but they hunt human women. Not for killing, for mating."
Yeah.
Yeah. this is one of those films I wanted to include in this whole thing because it kind of straddles the line between sci-fi and horror. But the thing about it is it's kind of like, it's kind of horror and it's classed as a horror film, but it's got sci-fi element because it's about sort of genetically modified
fish.
Yeah, genetically modified fish, exactly. What more could you possibly want from a film?
Do you know what? I've got to admit, I did a bit of research on this because I was having a look and the director of it is, the credited director, is Barbara Peters.
Yeah.
Not much known about her. She only done a few films. Uncredited director of this is a guy called Jimmy T. McAhamy.
Right.
Who also directed and is big for, and mainly known for, doing the 1982 Snowman film, the animated one. And the animated version of the 2001 Christmas Carol movie.
Right.
I can understand why he would be credited for it, but they are his two biggest claims to fame.
Fair enough.
And it's just like, really? How'd you go from doing a film like this to then going on to going, no, I'm going to go and do loads of animation films?
Well, I could see why he wouldn't want to do another film like this, to be honest.
Yeah.
All right, initial thoughts on the film, initial reaction to the film.
It's a very confusing film, actually, because when I was watching it, I was starting to lead down the whole path when they were doing the whole genetic modification thing that it was to do with them mutating the fish. And then the way it went, it's got a lot of twists and turns in it with certain things that's gone on. But it is, again, a very typical 80s film.
It is in a lot of ways. It's got an underlying type, sort of environmental message and the sort of like whole messy with science thing and all that.
Yeah, the whole genetic modification.
Yeah.
GM
it's also
debate.
Got a slight sort of leaning towards the sort of highlighting racism towards Native Americans because there's a certain amount of that in it. And it also has a hell of a lot of typical 1980s sexism.
Yeah. There's the one bit, is the fact that I sat there and I watched it. I was watching it with my partner and we sat there and I went, oh, I wonder what happens here. And we sort of, one of the scenes, woman running down the beach and I went, I bet her top comes off.
Yeah.
And she went, no, it won't. Literally 2 seconds later, her top went flying off and told you.
Yeah, no, there was a lot of it, yes.
Yeah, it was,
mind you, I mean, the whole premise about the fact of mutated fish mating with human women is...
My whole thing about this and is the fact that the premise is the fact that there's these fish, or these genetically modified fish that these scientists create, get swept out into the sea somehow and actually get eaten by another lot of fish that were dormant and not very well evolved. My also thing is, why was it only male fish?
Yes, true. My thing was, I couldn't work out whether it was genetically modified fish that had been eaten by other fish, or if it was the fact that the thing that they'd used to genetically modify them had leaked out.
I think they said it was 3,000 specimens have been washed out to sea. Now, that's not just a small accident.
No. Although, if they were only eggs, maybe.
Yeah, but still, that's still a hell of a lot of specimens. But yeah, it was. I will say, though, that this isn't a film that if you're. This is mainly for a lot of people that suffer with dyslexia or something like that. If you want to try and announce this film to someone else, you might need to make sure you read it right. Because I said this to a few people that I know, and had it in my head, because that's how I read it, as hemorrhoids, not humanoids. it was hemorrhoids from the deep, not humanoids.
I think that would make a better film.
Yeah. Well, looking at the specimens and the fish, it did look like it, which is one of the reasons why I had it in my head, I'm sure.
I don't think it's a very good film. I mean, to me, the fact that it's 1980 gives it a certain thing. A 1980s sort of B movie is never going to be the greatest movie in the world. Any film, pretty much any film that's got Doug McClure in it is not going to be the greatest film in the world.
Do you know what? The problem is, all I kept referring to was the whole Simpsons film.
I know. What I loved was silly things like, there's a bit in it, I mean, we'll get to it a bit later, but there's a bit in it where they're in, right towards the end, where they finally find out what's happened and they've got the specimen in the lab. And she's having, the doctor's having a go at her assistant. And he's standing behind her and he's just sort of staring at her, and the eyes on him, he's looking directly at her mouth and then at her nose and at her eyes, then at her head, and then at her mouth again.
Yeah.
And he's kind of like pulling these very strange faces.
He's got a very wooden acting style.
Oh, yeah. This is the very first time he sees her. They're at this buffet table in the party thing. And he walks up beside her, stretches himself up as tall as he can, stands up on tiptoes, looks at her head, and then drops back down again. It's like, what was that all about?
Yeah, I did notice that. I looked at it more as the fact that he was trying to sort of realise that she was taller than him. And I thought, okay, but it's just the fact that, again, there was no explanation to it. It's just he looked over, stretched himself up, turned around, and then gradually, obviously, crouched back down. I'm like, what?
Yeah, very strange. Right, I mean, to start off with, the thing that got me right from the beginning, the opening scenes, right?
Yeah.
And almost all the underwater scenes, okay, you've got fairly clear water that's very blue with sunlight coming through it and lots of seaweed.
Yeah.
And then it goes from that to a shot of a really rocky outcrop with waves crashing really heavily against them, and then to a really deep water harbour with lots of boats in. So that wouldn't have seaweed in either.
No.
All the way through, 90% of the time, the sky was fairly grey, apart from when you had long shots of the beach, and then there was sunshine for some reason.
Yeah. So
where was the sunlight coming from playing through the water, as it was this shallow, I think it was like a fish tank.
Yeah. See, there were bits of that. There was a scene later on in it that it was very obvious that it wasn't done at the sea, at a beach side. It was a stage set. Because of the fact that there's part of the scene where there's a woman standing out at sea, and it's very obvious a distance away from the coast.
Right.
But the water's only up to the top of her thigh.
Yeah.
I would say she's a good 10, 15 feet out from the coast, which most coastlines I've been to, that's quite high waters.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was like just above her knee. And I'm like,
well, even that she had long legs.
Yeah.
No, I think
I didn't hold high hopes for it, though, when the start of it, very first, straight away, it was very sinister music.
Yeah.
It just normally like with a lot of horror films, it builds up to that, but it wasn't. It was straight away on edge, and I'm like,
yeah,
no, it doesn't work.
Now, I mean, apart from the still very stilted acting all the way through from almost everyone.
Yeah.
I mean, my first thing, the thing that struck me was when they're out on the boat fishing, right? And I know it's a family-run business. Don't get me wrong. I understand that. But why would you have a kid who looked like he was probably about 12, 13?
Yeah.
Working on the fishing boat, looking after the winch, and expecting him to put petrol in it.
Yeah.
So that it's working properly. Leaving her alone to fill up the petrol while the boat's out at sea.
Yeah, there was.
And expecting him to then come and run and help you when you're trying to get the fishing line in.
So even that, you know, the scene in that, it made me laugh and I had to stop the film because of the fact that it's very obvious when he puts the canister down of petrol to fill the winch up that he was blatantly putting it on the edge.
Yes.
Like most people, like especially if they're around the boat life that long, they know that obviously waves crash over, there's things that go over the place. So he should know.
Yeah.
But it was the fact that he carefully placed it so it was on the edge.
Right.
And it's just like, even in a rush, you'd make sure that was fully on.
You see, the other thing is, look, it's just like, you know, there was an awful lot of bad luck there in one little section. The net gets stuck.
Yeah.
Winch hasn't got petrol in it, so they can't use it.
The
boom arm starts to break. The engine of the ship, of the boat, rather, runs out of oil.
Yeah, just it finally leaks enough oil to stop it working.
The kid gets thrown overboard and gets attacked by one of the monsters.
I will say...
and then the pilot of the ship trips over when he's trying to send a distress fare and blows the ship up.
Yeah. See, there's two things with that bit. That's that first scene. Bear in mind, this is all still the first, 5 minutes?
Yeah.
It was the... First off, before they actually left onto the boat, it was the sinister music that Pan ran to the one-legged seagull, which I laughed at. I thought was very, very well placed. But no, it's just the fact that as the boy, the young kid, whatever, goes under the water, he's very... And even for them times, I understand, but it's very obvious that the fact that the footage was rolled backwards to make him look like he was pulled under.
Yes.
It was done in reverse because of the fact, if you look at the bubbles, it's blatantly obvious.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, I'll let him off. Yeah. But then it just, that boat, for anyone, it was a flare gun on petrol.
Yeah.
That boat blew up very quickly.
And it was a big explosion.
I have put overkill on the blowing up the boat. But it's just the fact that it was almost like, it was a massive explosion for a small little petrol leak.
Absolutely.
Especially in the middle of the sea.
So, okay, we got that done. But the next thing that got me was the fact that these mutant fish are coming out to mate with human females.
Right? Yeah.
Their whole thing. Why did they start off by attacking dogs?
Yes, I don't know if this is my sort of animal welfare head coming in for a moment, but I had more of an issue as the fact that this was meant to be a family dog for Doug McClure's character. It's meant to be a family dog, family there to defend the family, but yet they were quite happy to let it out and leave it out all night.
Yes.
Bugger off, and then they come out like it's even then they come out in the morning blazing the sunshine but look at the sky and it's grey.
Yeah.
It's just like come out and then call it. I'm like, really? You've left the dog out all night and not bothered about checking on it once?
One of the other things that got me was when the guys turn up at the harbour and they find their dog's dead.
Yeah.
They turn up in a truck that's full of beer. They're going out on a boat and they're going to get drunk, obviously, right? But it's full of beer, and they're drinking cans of beer, and they're unloading this beer to go onto their boat. But the guy who's in charge of them, who's played by Vic Morrow, he gets out of his cab, out of the cab of the truck, right? And he's got a can of beer in a coffee mug.
Yeah.
Why? Why is it in a coffee mug? Everybody
I don't know.
The cans. What? I mean, what's that all about?
I don't know.
But see, you then go to this thing where you've got a house in the woods, whatever, and there's a woman in the bar from brushing her hair, who for some reason, best known to herself, is in immensely sexy underwear. She hears a noise outside, so she goes out of the door to have a look outside, not putting anything on, comes back in leaving the door open, and then puts on this kind of silk robe thing. And there's no point in her putting it on because of the fact that all the time she's wearing it, it's draped down around the middle of her arms.
Yeah.
So that and pulled around her front so that all you can see of her is her boobs, basically.
Yeah.
It's completely pointless putting the robe on. Just don't understand why she bothered.
No, I don't. That was because obviously that part of the scene there, her boyfriend, partner, whatever it is, turns up. And the whole scene between them, even if only in a couple of minutes, is very sort of, again, 80s teen romance sort of, you can wait for the right time, bollocks. And it's just like, really? It's just.
It's so, the thing with me is it's so stilted. It's supposed to be two people who are in a relationship and in love or whatever, and they're talking to each other as if they've only just met.
Yeah.
It's just kind of like, there's no real emotional interaction there. It's just kind of like words. They go off to the party, which is brilliant.
The Salmon Festival.
The Salmon Festival. The band were brilliant.
Oh, was it? Yeah.
I'm not quite sure.
Was it Joe Williams and her rock band or country band or whatever it was, but yeah,
it was like, really, okay, it's a country hoedown, whatever. But the doctor, when the guy introduces the doctor, she looks so unhappy. It's so, I really don't want to be here.
Yeah, the sort of the introducing them to the president of the canning company.
But what gets me is that he actually states that the canning plant that they're building, the new canning plant that they're building, is going to be the best thing to happen since God created the waters, basically.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, really?
It's the fact that they say that and the whole crowd or the whole town cheers.
I know. Well,
it's like, really?
It's very strange. But the whole thing with Doug McClure checking his height against the doctor, which is bizarre. And, and then the Indian turns up with his dog, the Native American, I should say, sorry, turns up with his dog, which has now been killed. And you kind of get the impression that the guys who found their dog dead have killed his dog.
Yeah.
So, as a revenge.
It does the whole racism.
Yeah.
Of the way that Native Americans were treated over there at that time. It's the whole, they were singled out as.
The guy, Vic Morrow's character, says to him a couple of times about him being drunk and about him. They kind of consider that because he's an Indian, they sort of call him, he's like drunk and he's a thief or he's a criminal.
Yeah.
And then they take him outside and they have possibly the lamest fight in a film I've ever seen. I mean,
yeah.
They were throwing each other around. There was a couple of punches thrown. Most of the time.
Yeah, mainly by Doug. I would say the best part, the only punches I did really see were by Doug McClure.
Yeah. The rest of the time, they're just pushing each other around, basically.
Yeah.
In a sort of forceful way. And then when you see them the next day, everybody has got black eyes and bruises all over their faces, apart from Doug McClure.
Yeah. The best bit I liked about the whole fight is the fact that there's the young teenage couple are in the back of a car sort of trying to get on with each other.
Yeah.
And one of the guys gets thrown against the car and he opens the bonnet up, or the boot up, sorry, to open up, and opens it up and straight away gets punched.
Yeah.
They're in the process of that. They do have a, or just after that, they have the first woman that gets abducted.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who, in my eyes, bearing in mind that I get the fact that she was terrified because of it was the first time anyone had seen them. She was terrified and didn't know what else. Didn't really seem to fight back that much, though.
No.
I mean, yeah. The whole, but it was the whole, it was the typical scream.
Yeah.
The whole, oh my God. Bollocks.
Yeah. No, I know.
And I just, like, it's almost like it was, it's a soundbite for every 80s horror film. It's just, they put it in. It's almost exactly the same pitch, tone, everything.
I think you can actually, I don't know, I think you can actually download it from somewhere. You can download 80s female victim scream from somewhere and put it into any film you want.
Yeah, it just, I don't know. I get the fact that she was on the beach, so there's not a lot of stuff to grab hold of to be able to find her. But it's just the fact that she just sort of like lays there.
Yeah.
Like, oh no. It's like,
what? There's a bit there where Vic Morrow's character goes up to, he goes up for some reason to spy on the Native American guy.
Oh, yeah.
Native American guy's talking about they're going to sue them and they're going to take to court and all this sort of thing. But when he goes up there, he's going along the river on his boat. And for some reason, bearing this is
right, in
the middle of the day, there's a shot of an owl that hoots.
Yeah.
And it's quite, I mean, it's full screen sort of poof, owl. And
yeah.
Why? I don't get what that has to do with anything.
But it's just it's the very obviousness that it was recorded at different times.
It was just
Vic Morrow's character's going up the river. It's not very sunny, but it's obvious that it's daytime. There's sun there, there's light there. And then it goes to the shot of the owl and it's pitch black and it's like, it's admittedly the owl's only on the screen for a couple of seconds, but it doesn't. But it's pitch black behind it, there's no light, and it's just like, what the hell? What was that for?
What I can say is it's something, having made movies and been involved in movies a bit, right? It's something that you don't often find people do. They'll have a scene and you go, oh, hang on a minute, that needs to be a second longer. You just put a stock, second long stock piece of footage in the middle of the scene for no particular reason other than to stretch the scene out for a second or two.
Yeah. But it's just the fact that it's just like, going down the river and it was, whoo, like, what? Hang on, it's like meant to be midday. What?
So when after that, when you get the couple on the beach who were trying to get it on, and the other woman who was drawing, watching them. Yeah. For some reason, she was watching them. I don't quite know why.
Yeah.
And they go
it's,
off.
It's not even like she was making it sort of slight. It was very obvious, sort she was of
staring.
Yeah. And don't be wrong, it does just prove a lot about the different time genres, because nowadays if you're sitting on a beach and someone's staring at you, no matter where you are in the world, you're going to have a go. Someone's going to have a go. But it's just the fact they get up and walk off. And I'm like,
but that was where I sort of noticed the thing, like, I noticed the thing there where it was like when they were showing it up close and when they were walking, you could see their feet and you could see their whole bodies. The sand looked wet. It looked like it had been raining or something. The sky was fairly grey and dingy. And they were wandering off. And then when you see a long shot of them walking along another bit of beach,
it's very bright
sunshine. Sunshine, and there's like long shadows of them and all this kind of stuff. It's like, well, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
But then they start play fighting in the water and he gets attacked by the monster.
Now, yes, I looked at that as well. When he got attacked, I get the fact that obviously that it's a lot of makeup style. I've seen the way that they do for a lot of fake makeup. But it did look like his face was melted, not cold.
Yes, true. But what got me was the fact that he goes down into some very shallow water. They're only up to their calves.
Yeah.
Or their knees at the most. He goes into some very shallow water. You see him underwater get attacked by this thing and you see blood coming out all over the place. How did she not see the blood in the shallow water?
Yeah.
It's happening right in front of her.
Yeah, it happened like all of us about 2 foot, I'd say, about away from her. And even with a bit of a murky water, you'd be able to see the claret that was supposedly coming out. But she's just looking around going, oh, where are you? But then when she turns around and he's kneeling or standing sort of in the water.
Standing crouched over, yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, okay, maybe it's not that bad of an accident. But then he turns round, and that's when you see like half his face is missing. He then falls over, and he's holding his bed, it's still shallow water.
Yeah.
His whole body disappears.
Yeah.
Under the water. It's like this water's meant to be like a foot deep. What?
Then the monster chases her up the beach and grabs hold of her. And the thing you got me is like sort of amazingly, considering she's wearing almost nothing, amazingly, the monster manages to catch her bra and rip it off.
Yeah.
And it's like, sort of, why do we need the naked boobs? There's no need for that.
But it's just the bit that I did also like, or not like, but it's the fact that sort of find funny is the fact that every time these monsters grab hold of the males or people they're attacking, with just a touch of their claw, there was blood and guts everywhere.
Yeah.
And yet they managed to hold the women perfectly with no cuts or bruises or marks on them. Just like, yeah. If they got retractable claws or
But it just, I don't know if I'm becoming a bit of a prude, if I'm getting old or what it is. But it's just like, you know, why do we need to see naked boobs all the time? It's no need for it. It doesn't add anything to the thing.
See, my whole thing as well that I find out of all, funniest out of this whole film was there's a scene where there's a couple, doesn't really get explained why they're in a tent as well.
Yes.
On the beach.
And he's got a ventriloquist dummy that he's used to chat this woman up with.
But it's just the fact that she doesn't argue once when he turns around and says, oh, it happened, it works every time. Sorry, but if someone said that in my presence, I'd be like, hang on a minute, you've done this before. But then, obviously, they go to get down and he goes, I'm not going to need your help with this. And they and then the monster jumps in and starts clawing at the tent. But the eyes of the dummy, and they look at the dummy, they move.
I know.
This is like the man's being attacked and he's nowhere near the dummy. The woman's he's actually jumped out of the tent, even though it was all done up, and run off.
Yeah.
But the dummy's eyes and mouth moved. Like they were being controlled.
Yeah, the thing got me was the other thing was there must have been two of the monsters because she runs away from one that's going through the tent and she runs up the beach and runs into another one. But what happened to the one that was chasing her? Wouldn't he have carried on chasing her?
Well, that's the thing is the fact that it's not actually explained about how many there actually are.
No.
Because obviously later on there are a lot more than just one. But it's just the fact that it's a sort of. Yeah, it just does seem like he goes, the first monster goes, oh, someone else has got, I'm just going to give up and disappears. It's like,
yeah.
Hang on a minute, if their whole animal instinct to mate was there, then they'd fight. They'd go over and.
Well, you would have thought so.
Which then leads on to the fact that they do attack more then after that and start getting a bit more sort of, a lot more open.
The bit after who that gets me. You've got the bit after that where the Vic Morrow and his gang go after the Native American. They go up to his place. And what I loved about that was, again, it was another one bit like the boat at the beginning. They throw a Molotov cocktail at the house and it explodes. It explodes like it's got about a ton of dynamite in it.
It's the fact like they've just come out from, like, there's the Cherokees, the Native Americans in there with. Two of the other characters having dinner of some sort.
Yeah.
Or prepared it all. And then they come out to cook on the barbecue and then get this Molotov cocktail thrown at it. And the house, explodes dramatically.
It's brilliant. My comment
is the fact, obviously, they try putting out the fire and the woman goes down to the waterfront to grab a bucket of water.
Yeah.
And one of the guys turns around and goes, oh, it's like, that would be like putting a cup on it. Just like, it'd be like throwing a bucket of water on it, surely.
But they tell her to go off to town for help.
Yeah.
So they pump this water thing to start the hose, right? And then the guy, it's Doug McClure's son, turns around and thinks it's one of the people that have thrown the Molotov cocktail. And he goes over and he fires the rifle twice.
Yeah.
The Native American guy is using the hose on the house, right? He fires the rifle a couple of times. When he fires it, when he sees the monster in the water, he fires it even more times. And then he's splashing about in the water and thumping the water with the I'm trying to hit the thing.
The Native American doesn't move.
The Native American never once turns around to see what he's firing at or what's going on until it's near the end. And you go, he's almost dead anyway.
Yeah, there's a lot of splashing and a lot of noise that you would have heard. Because, bear in mind, this is all they're meant to be all of what? About 5-6 foot away from each other?
Yeah. I mean, they're not like
far away. If it was the roar of the fire, you'd still hear someone splashing and shooting guns.
Yeah. I know. And
it's just like, okay. And then he turns around, but it just doesn't, when he first turns around and spots it, it doesn't seem that surprised.
He turns around and he's like,
and runs down the stairs. I'm like, no, mate, you're someone you know is being very viciously attacked by whatever. You can't see what it is straight away, and you just walk down the steps.
Yeah. And then she's gone off to the town. Now, the thing you've got to be right is she's going inland, okay, and two of these things jump, or one of these things jumps on the car. Now,
yeah.
Why would they be that far away from the water if they need to? I wouldn't get that. That's another bit where she puts her foot on the brake and the monster goes flying off the thing.
Yep.
And then she looks out the window, and instead of seeing it get up, they roll the film backwards slightly, so you see it rolling backwards a bit.
Yeah.
Then you see it attacking her again. But what got me as well was I was thinking, oh, maybe there's another river nearby or something like that. And she goes over this bridge and comes off the side of the bridge and hits dry land. What is that bridge over? There's nothing under there.
No, his truck hits
it and explodes.
Yeah, it's the very quickness. I know that a lot of vehicles have now come a long way in modern technology, so they don't blow up as easily. But maybe it's just my naivety, but I'm pretty sure that hitting a... I know that's a big old drop.
Yeah.
But even so, they wouldn't have exploded that quickly.
And that big. That's everything. All the explosions were so big.
Yeah.
Then you've got Doug McClure and that's the following morning, isn't it? They bring his son... The Native American brings his son back and they take him off to hospital because he's not quite dead. In the back of a pickup truck. And Doug McClure and Native American and the doctor go off to find out what's coming on.
What I did love, though, before they take him off, is the fact that Doug McClure sort of jumps onto the back of the van and goes, oh, my God, we need to save him. Go! And I'm like, you need to get off the truck first, dude. You're hanging on the side of it. And it's just like, go!
It's just, but they discover these remains and then they go out to sea and
I'm still not too sure what the remains were though.
No, nor am I.
You just see this sort of, they go under this broken bridge, wooden, whatever the hell it is. Yeah. But it's sort of this pile of very clean bones.
Well, I couldn't work out if they were the remains of some of the mutants or remains of humans that they'd eaten or something.
Yeah, but they were very pristine clean, though. For anyone, they were in a pile of mud as well.
Yeah.
They were very white and pristine. I'm like, okay.
So they go off to sea, and then they go into this sort of cave area where they get attacked by some of these things. But they get attacked by these things. What I love about it, she's taking photographs of them, and she keeps telling them not to kill them.
Yeah,
but she says it, and then they carry on shooting at them, and she doesn't really plead with them that much not to kill them.
No.
And watch him take photographs of them while they're being shot.
Yeah,
kind of bizarre. But then they get one of them and take it back to the lab. And this is one of the bits that got me. It's kind of like she explains everything that she reckons has gone on in the lab.
Yeah.
Right, and showing them films about it and all this kind of stuff. And not one of them seems to think, or neither Doug McClure or the Native Americans seem to think that there's anything bizarre at all about the idea of horny mutant fish wanting to mate with human women.
No.
They don't seem to think...
In actual fact, they sit there and watch the film. And the thing is that it proper made me chuckle. It's just a lot of the old... Sort of, I want to say olden days, but I know it's wrong. But a lot of the sort of earlier films when there was a whole sex scene or something... Most typically, the blokes would sit there and spark up a fag afterwards because of, that's the whole... Oh, yeah. But it's the fact that, dude, they watch a video of these frogs mating and the way the whole mate... And then as they pan out, Doug McClure then sparks up a fag.
Yeah.
And I'm like, hang on a minute, is that...
I mean, if somebody said to me, what you're under attack by is a bunch of mutant fish that want to mate with all the human women in the cell... I think yeah. I'd be going, no, hang on a minute. Could you
that pass me? I'd be sitting there going, hang on, go over that again. Or even be able to sit there and go, oh, what, you created these monsters? But they don't. They sit there and go, oh.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And like, Doug McClure goes, oh. Doug McClure goes, oh, the festival. Stop it.
Yeah. There's going to be loads of people around. We need to warn the town. No, the festival, the Salman Festival.
So they go down and you got the fairground and all that kind of stuff. And that, they take
that's the bit that, down. Yeah, the bit that I do love about that is the fact that, again, they take... Now, again, I did argue this. This is the fact that... I argue this mentally in my head. The fact that this is meant to be a scientific lab that they take this specimen to. Mm. They're there to do tests on it to find out what it is. Why did they both of the doctors and her assistant, allow them to take it to the fair?
I don't know. I didn't quite get that.
It's just the fact that, again, they open it up, they turn up, and everyone, the whole crowd around in the middle of this festival,
yeah,
and they go, oh, is this one of the fish monsters? Show it to the crowd of the whole town folk, and no one goes, oh, my God, and it reacts. They're like, oh.
Yeah. And then they start being attacked by them. But I mean, honestly, one thing got me was when they showed the festival. The worst thing, the thing that made me cringe the most was this guy supposedly doing the DJing and reporting on the radio.
Yeah.
Oh my God, he was awful. He was so cliched, sexist 1980s film thing. You know, it was just like, oh my
God. The woman that comes up to him that works for the studio and comes up and she leans over and goes, hi, babe, and kisses him. And then he smacks her on the arse.
Yeah.
And then he goes, oh, if you can catch her. Like, why would anyone be after trying to catch her?
Then you've got the thing where he turns around and he says, nobody can see him because he's talking on a microphone.
Yeah.
Apart from us, we're watching the film. And he's got Miss Salmon.
The Miss Salmon, who looks very, very, and I would say this, underage.
Very young. She does look very young.
Yeah.
She's sitting there in a bikini with a striped thing around a sash
over her.
Salmon. And he says, but you'll have to be quick to come in if you want to get hold of me because, and he flicks the sash out of the way so you can see her boobs. And he says, my hands might be full.
Yeah.
What was
the... But again, it's just that's the bit that makes me laugh is the fact that now I know that again, I know a lot of times have changed and the whole fight for rights stuff. But it's just the fact that nowadays, if that happened, women would have gone bang and slapped him and walked away. But she just sits there and giggles.
But it's like, why was there any need to do the sash thing? Because he was talking on a microphone to people listening on the radio.
Yeah,
that makes no sense. But
also, if you look for where the mic is standing, he does look like he's standing about 2 foot away from it.
Yeah, no, I know. He's not close enough to it. It's really
too yeah.
But
especially for when they do the shots of someone listening on the radio, it does seem like he's very up close to it.
Yeah. Well, it's the thing. You've got the double thing going on. You've got them down at the festival, and then you've got Doug McClure's wife being ministered by one of the creatures at home for some reason that we haven't quite... Yes, worked out. But the festival, I mean, these creatures come out and they start attacking everyone. And you see this whole thing about sort of thing where the Native American saves Vic Morrow's life or tries to save, like, and it's kind of like, you know, oh, it's them coming together, if you like, or whatever. and all of that stuff going on. And in the middle of all the chaos that's going on there, Doug McClure's wife's being menaced at home. He leaves the festival to go up to his home.
Yeah.
Now, don't get me wrong, I understand he's worried about his wife, but I'm not sure I could just walk away from this complete mayhem where there are dozens of them attacking all of the people in the town to go up.
This is after as well. He set fire to water.
Yeah, they poured loads of water on the I think they poured loads of petrol.
Fuel, I think.
Or some kind. And they fire a flare gun. Flare gun into it, and only one little patch lights up.
Yeah. And the fact that if you look as well, because I noticed it and I pointed it out and I laughed, but where are they pouring the petrol? There's meant to be loads of it. Where the doctor then fires the flare gun is actually about 5 foot away from where the fire starts.
Yeah. But what goes weird, surely it shouldn't be over. It shouldn't just be one little bit.
Yeah. But no, my whole thing is when Doug McClure's character goes back to his wife and goes, while she's being menaced by these monsters, it starts off with the fact that she's in the house with her son.
Yeah.
With the baby. Yeah. But it is very obvious that when he's scared, he screams.
Yeah.
Yeah. It seems to be that all at one moment, he's there and involved with all of it and being attacked. And then in the next scene, he's disappeared.
Yeah, well, she hid him in the toilet, didn't she?
He doesn't cry.
He doesn't cry. Just, there's no noise.
There's no noise whatsoever. It's almost like someone did the toilet or the room that she put him in was soundproof.
Well, it might well have been. You never know.
it's just even then. They fight off. She fights off the monsters, which I think is funny. Doug McClure, ends up having to shoot God knows how many bullets into one to get it down. She manages to defend off five with a kitchen knife.
Yeah, well, you know.
But the fact as well that Doug McClure turns up and stops her from attacking him.
Yeah.
And then goes, where's the baby? And then she goes, he's in the cupboard. And they go, oh, okay.
Yeah, he's safe.
he's safe. It's like, yeah, okay. You're not going to go check on him first. But they just stand in the doorway and hug.
Yeah, I've got to say, my favourite bit was when they go back to the festival.
Yeah.
They walk down through the middle of the festival. Now, if you're very close, if you watch very closely and you're quick, right?
Yeah.
As they come down past the merry-go-round, there's huge clouds of smoke coming out from underneath the top of the merry-go-round. As they come and walk round, if you look in the background, there's a guy at the back with a big ball wafting the smoke up. And as the camera comes round, he walks off behind the smoke.
What I think is funny, though, is the fact that merry-go-round is two notes that I put down because of the... When the big fight's happening...
Yeah.
Yeah, and these monsters appear and attack people, there is a woman that is still sitting on a horse that goes round the merry-go-round while a monster is chasing her.
Yeah.
And the fact that when Doug McClure and his wife come back, the fact that obviously there's smoke around and yeah, the bit where the guy's wafting it. But there is a couple sitting on the merry-go-round that looks like it's on fire.
Yeah.
And they're just sitting there. I'm like, sorry, but if there was a fire on something, I wouldn't be sitting next to it, no matter how scared I was.
That's the you always get someone at one of these places. It's like, I paid me money, I'm getting me ride. I don't care.
Yeah. But there was a bit that I thought was funny, and it was again while they were in the fight. It's the fact that these monsters are sea monsters. They come from the sea. They're all wet. They're all dropping wet. Yeah. But there was a scene in the middle of the fight where someone throws. I can't remember what it was, but it's this something that was on fire, and it catches this monster.
Yeah.
Now this monster is meant to be sopping wet, and goes up like almost like a haystack. It just goes up in flames. I'm like,
yeah, no, what? I know exactly what you mean. It doesn't make any sense at all.
No. And the fact as well, the bit before that, and I pick fault in it mainly because of the fact that it's just the fact I do this a lot, and I pick fault in a lot of films like that. But when Doug McClure's character they tie the boat back up, and the doctor gets attacked. They defend him. They defend sort of her. He then goes to jump off and goes to, when he goes to rescue his wife. Now, when they pull up, both sides of the boat, both the front and back of the boat, were tied up.
Right.
But when Doug McClure jumps in his boat and goes off to rescue his wife, he only undoes the front. He undoes the front and pushes the boat away from the dock and just drives off. And I'm like, no, because the back was tied up. They would either break the dock or...
break the boat.
Break the boat, yeah. And the fact as well, when Doug McClure's wife, character's wife, is fighting off these monsters, she sprays, and I had to pause it to figure out what it was, this liquid in the monster's eye. Now, I stopped it and it's actually drain cleaner.
Yeah.
But it's the way that it affects it. Don't worry, I know the drain cleaner in the eye of anyone, human, monster, whatever, is going to hurt. But it's almost the smoke and the steam that come off it. It's almost like you would see in, like, when someone gets attacked by acid.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean.
And it's just like, really?
A bit over the top.
So, yeah, it's...
We get the final fight scene and that sort of thing. And what I think, by the looks of it, at the end of it, some of them escape. I don't think they get monsters.
No.
So then we get the final scene of it where they've got one of these girls that's been attacked by the monsters in...
Yeah, was it Brandy?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
She's in this laboratory in a delivery room, which for some reason has got a bookshelf in it, which I couldn't quite work out.
See, I didn't notice that. My whole bit was had a marine biologist who is taking pictures of everything. Is the doctor that's delivering or trying to deliver?
I think it's because she's the only doctor there. But
yeah, but this is like
behind where she's standing. There's a bookshelf that's set into the wall, which is
not having to see that.
Then they're trying to deliver the baby, which then comes out of her stomach, sort of like in like Alien.
Yeah,
bursts through her stomach and starts screaming and that, and that's kind of the end of the film. And it was very predictable because American films, especially 80s American films, always had this thing that they would leave the ending open so that if there was a possibility that they could get enough money to make a sequel, they would have something to run on from it.
Well, saying about a sequel though, this film was actually remade.
No.
Wait. Yeah, it was remade in 1996.
Why?
I don't know. But with a completely different cast, I would say.
Oh.
A completely different cast, different director, different producers, everything. Even down to a completely different company that paid for it to be remade. Like, this one was same done name. By... Yeah, same name.
Okay.
But it was done in 1996 and then didn't come out on DVD until 2003. So there was no footage of this until 2003 when it was released on DVD.
Okay, that's weird.
Yeah, it's the part of the thing I looked at when I was looking it up. I was like, I thought it said that it would have been like remastered, but it was like remade in 1996.
God almighty. I can't imagine why anyone would look at that and go, well, no, I can imagine why someone would look at it and say we could make that better, but I can't imagine why you would look
but it's...
So anyway, right, I mean, you've been through the film and ripped it apart fairly significantly. My final question is, final thoughts. What would you say to anyone about the film?
Again, I know I say this a lot, but it's definitely a lot of the films that we've talked about so far, that they're definitely ones that I would say, they're a bit of a waste of time. This one, Gary, is... But there are a few hidden messages behind it. The whole GM sort of genetically modified debate, the whole overfishing bit, and the racism bit. If that is, there are a lot of hidden messages. Merely could have been done a whole different way, but it's definitely one to watch if you're into Doug McClure, really. If you like Doug McClure films, it's definitely a film to watch.
The thing I would say is, for me, I like science fiction B-movies. I like horror movies. I like bad movies, just because they're fun to watch. What I would say about this film is that I had to watch it four times to watch it all the way through without falling asleep.
Wow. Okay. Really? Yeah. I watched it this morning, and yeah, it's definitely a film that I think if I'd watched at night, I probably would have fallen asleep.
There are much better films with an ecological message that came out in the 80s, much better films that had an anti-racism thing that came out in the 80s, much better sci-fi and horror films that came out in the 80s. And dare I say it, there are much better Doug McClure movies than this one.
Oh, wow.
So I think on the whole, we both agree that it's not the greatest film in the world.
It's
not the greatest Doug McClure film in the world by any stretch of the imagination. There you go. I promised you, when I talked to you a while ago, I promised you that the next film we do will not be a 1980s rubbish film, right?
If you say 1970s, I'm not going to do it.
No. So I thought the next one we do, we'll come a bit more up to date. Thank you to everybody who's been listening, if anybody has been listening, and we will see you again down the line. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
The Sci-Fi Film Podcast.